Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
No dasher and dancer and prancer and vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say,
I got the jazz hands for you today. Thanks, Amy, for that. A great way to start off this session for thank you, everyone, for joining us during day 11 of the 12 days of TMC. We're getting close to the end there. This session is redlining back, looking at HMDA and Fair Lending Insights for 2024. And with us today to talk about this topic is Amy Azarandia, SVP of Mortgage and Compliance and Systems at First Trust Bank, and Kirk Willison, VP of Government and Industry Relations at Arch Mortgage Insurance. With that, I am going to turn it over to the two of you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Faith. And it's delightful to be here with Amy and poor Rudolph the red-lined reindeer. Amy and I are going to talk about a lending practice that was once endorsed by the federal government, but now is considered a criminal activity. To understand redlining, what it is and why it was created, we need to go back in time to the 1930s and the creation of the Homeowners Loan Corporation. The Federal Housing Administration, the FHA, which was tasked with ensuring economically sound loans, really began the process of redlining all the way back in 1934. To determine which loans were economically sound, maps of areas, urban areas generally, were color-coded by mortgage security risk. And it so happens that majority African-American areas were disproportionately likely to be marked in red, with the designation meaning these are hazardous areas. Let me show you I'm going to share my screen here and show you an example of a redlined area. This, you can see on your screen, this goes back again to the Homeowners Loan Corporation's maps for the city of Philadelphia back in 1934. And the areas you see here in red are the ones that were primarily, the residents were African American. If they were in yellow, well, a little questions there too. The safer areas to lend were the blue and the green areas that you also see found there. This was created, the Homeowners Loan Corporation had a project called the City Survey Project, and it ran from 1935 to 1940. And the racist attitudes and the language found in the government agency's appraisal sheets, its residential security maps, it really gave federal support to real estate practices that helped segregate America's cities. It has lasted to this day. The Federal Reserve actually did a recent report on the history of redlining, and it found that FHA justified racial discriminations on the grounds that, and I'm going to quote here, no loan could be economically sound if the area with the property was located in a neighborhood that was or could become populated by Black people. as property values might decline over the life of the 15 to 20 year loan that they were insuring, unquote. And I come back now and stop sharing here. So it's really a remarkable policy that our own federal government had. And let's take it even a step further. The FHA in those days was financing the building of new home developments and was happy to do so as long as the developments were going to be occupied by white people. So redlining didn't become illegal really officially until the passage in 1968 of the Fair Housing Act. But, you know, we really haven't as a country made a whole lot of progress in the intervening years. Home ownership among Black Americans has climbed a little bit and then it slipped back down, particularly during the global financial crisis. But the fact is that today, the percentage of Blacks owning homes is roughly the same it was back before 1968, when it was actually legal to deny a Black family home ownership. The white home ownership rate is about 30 percentage points higher than the Black home ownership rate here in America. Now, there's been an Office of Fair Housing within the Department of Housing and Urban Development for literally decades. But the Biden administration, when it came into office in January of 2021, brought really new vibrancy to the effort to stop redlining and enforcing fair housing laws, really like never before. For example, when the President Biden came into office, within his first month in office, he signed four different executive orders to focus on racial inequity. The first one of those four dealt with housing. And you guys, if you haven't heard over the 12 days here, you probably are aware that the FHFA, for example, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, the regulator of Fannie and Freddie, has been very, very active in telling the GSEs to focus on purchasing more loans to minorities to begin to even out the equality in home ownership. The inequality, as we know, they're trying to take steps to erase. So no one really should be surprised by the fact that the Biden administration has branched into other areas to able to focus on inequality in housing. In October of 2021, for instance, the Department of Justice created its Combating Redlining Initiative. And it began investigating lenders and enforcing the laws as it came known to them where the violations were occurring of the Federal Fair Housing Act. And they're not really taking cases to court, but they are being very active and really forcing the companies to settle. And so far, at least eight lenders have settled with the Department of Justice just since 2021, the fall of 2021. Justice brought redlining cases against banks in Tennessee, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Ohio, California, and Florida. And it brags that it secured more than $107 million in relief for communities of color nationwide from settlements from these institutions. Now, you know, you might be thinking, those are banks. I don't work for a bank. I work for an independent mortgage bank. We aren't covered by CRA. We aren't necessarily having a service territory that we have to focus on. If you feel that way, pay attention to this next anecdote of mine. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, brought a case. Now, this one actually began during the Trump administration against Townstone Financial. Townstone is a non-bank lender in the Chicago area. CFP argued that Townstone violated the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, better known as ECOA, because it drew almost no applications for properties in majority Black neighborhoods. It engaged in discriminatory acts, particularly on its weekly radio show, when this radio show was its only means of marketing to a public. It was a talk radio show on a very conservative talk radio show in the Chicago area, and they brought in loan officers to talk about loans and the so-called educate borrowers about the mortgage market. In the process of doing this, they spent a lot of time degrading Black neighborhoods, for example, calling the South Side of Chicago a war zone, and telling people, you know, on their lives, they would never stop in that neighborhood, drive by, duck your heads, you're driving through, et cetera. And the CFPB also charged them with discouraging prospective applicants in other areas from applying for mortgage loans on properties that were located in predominantly Black communities. Now, Townstone fought these charges vigorously, and they argued that ACOA only applies when discriminating against borrowers who actually applied for loans, not those who were discouraged. And the U.S. District Court in the Northern District of Illinois agreed with Townstone. So CFPB lost its case against Townstone, but it is appealing. And the way that they're appealing is the Bureau argues that in interpreting ACOA, the court should have considered language in ACOA's Regulation B that stipulates that a creditor shouldn't make any oral or written statement, advertising or otherwise, to an applicant or a prospective applicant that would discourage them from a reasonable person from making or pursuing an application. I think we can expect that whoever wins this appeal, the loser is going to appeal again. And in that case, it would go to the Supreme Court. So expect that in a couple of years' time, the Supreme Court will end up being the determining factor in whether Townstone is determined to be guilty of discrimination or whether ACOA, on a very strict language interpretation, will be upheld and that they will win. So, Amy, other than perhaps retaining the very best fair lending lawyers and keeping them on retainer, what should lenders do?
That's a very, very big question. In fact, I think that was one of the questions that came through right away was, you know, what can we do to protect ourselves, right? You had mentioned a little bit about the Biden administration and kind of in early 2021, how that kind of changed things with that executive order that came out. And it did, right? And since then, we've seen every single agency really focus on housing, which is a good thing. But we have to make sure from a compliance perspective that we're protecting ourselves. So for example, HUD, one of their number one issues is a racial and ethnic issue of home ownership and closing the wealth gap. CFPB, they've said fair lending enforcement. OCC, safe and sound and focused on fair lending enforcement. DOJ, systemic race and national origin discrimination in housing and lending, specifically addressing redline. FDIC, same thing. Everybody is going in the exact same direction. So what can you do? I suggest looking at the consent orders from the DOJ. Each of them has a very similar type pattern that they're following. At the end of the day, these consent orders from the DOJ follow an investment into your community, right? So we see that they're looking for X amount of dollars in loan subsidy, special purpose credit program. If you don't have one, start creating them. Or, you know, if it's not a special purpose credit program that you can actually create yourself because maybe you're not a bank, maybe you're an independent, then using what the GSEs have available, putting up X amount of dollars for community development, partnerships, and then X amount of dollars for advertising and outreach. This is not unfamiliar to any of us that have been in lending for a period of time. At the end of the day, they want us to invest more in our communities of color. They want us to target both advertising and outreach in communities of color and provide consumer education benefiting communities of color, right? So we know that. Are we all doing it? Are we all doing it to the best of our ability? I don't know. What do you think, Kirk?
Well, I think that it's a struggle. I think it, you see smaller lenders looking and saying, geez, you know, we'd love to be able to do more, but we have a large bank in our community, and they seem to be sucking up all the loans. And I wonder, you come from a relatively small institution. How do you guys look at whether you're successful or not when you're trying to compare yourself to your peers or even others?
And it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, you showed us a map of Philadelphia. That's where we're located, is in Philadelphia. So we're trying to correct the issues from the past now in the future. It really comes down to making sure that you're staffing correctly. We're really retail focused right now. We're hiring and we're also home growing our loan officers so that we can penetrate the communities. We're trying to meet the people where they are, target those faith-based communities and schools. We are heavily documenting our advertising efforts and our outreach. We're trying to do a better job on that than we've ever had before. And we're thinking about, you know, what does it look like if we create a special purpose credit program next year? And what does that look like? We've always had a CRA type product, but what does it look like if we do a special purpose credit program? I think at the beginning of it, you have to know who you're lending to, right? You have to identify and have a strategy. We recently had the FDIC talking to us, and they asked us very pointed questions. Specifically, they want to know, you know, how are you establishing your marketing areas? What metrics did you use when deciding where you were going to penetrate a particular area? What were methods as to where you were putting your branch locations? Is your staff representative of the areas that you're covering? How are you sourcing your applications? And they want to know about your specifically your marketing strategy and the budget behind it and digital strategy. If you're using any filters or anything like that as you're targeting members within your community.
Amy, did they ask you anything about your peers and maybe how you think you compare against them?
Absolutely. We all have to look at our peers. 200% to 50% is kind of the gauge, right? So you want to look at volume. It doesn't matter if you're an independent, if you're a bank, if you're a credit union, you want to look at the HMDA data and you want to look, you know, 200% above your volume and then 50% below your volume. Those are your peers. And then how do you stack up? You want to go place by place by place and measure yourself to see where you land and where you fall. For us, we use iEmergent, which is part of the network, partner member. And I know that Jeremy and Matt were talking about iEmergent the other day in their session. I forget what day they did their session, but I did hear it and it was excellent. They were talking about the underserved communities and just how pivotal using iEmergent you know, helped them with their tracking to see how they were stacked up against their peers.
And how big of an issue is it when it comes to compliance? I mean, how many people do you in your institution, and you might share maybe the size of your institution, do you have in compliance, and maybe translate that to an independent mortgage bank that maybe never had to do this before? How do they even begin to start looking at an issue like this?
So we're lucky, we're a bank. So we have our legal team, we have our audit team, and then also in the mortgage department, we've decided to staff compliance within our department. If I were an independent, you know, you have to look and see how much volume are you doing? How many states are you licensed in? If you're licensed in a handful of states, maybe your compliance staff is relatively small. If you're doing all 50 states and you have multiple streams, wholesale, retail, consumer direct, then you need to make sure that you're adequately staffed to handle all of your compliance needs.
And do you think it's enough for an institution to, when you, as I say, you were talking to the FDIC, to say, listen, we're colorblind. You know, the loans go through and they go through our black box or artificial intelligence. And this is the results. And if it means that we only have 2% minority lending, well, everyone had a fair chance.
That's not a good answer. We all know that. Not a good answer. You can't have a ring around your majority minority census tracts. that's not going to look so good, right? Or a circle around them. You have to make sure that you are intentionally going into these neighborhoods and serving everybody, including those that don't have access to maybe the financial products that some other locations may have better access to. You need to hire staff that's going to go into that those locations. And if you're not hiring them, then you better homegrow them and get them into those communities. Meet people where they are. Make sure that it's part of your strategic plan to penetrate. Because if you don't do it, the regulators are going to make sure that you do it.
It is. I mean, clearly this is a push that this administration is very determined in. And, you know, even I think at every step of the way, even the Federal Reserve has taught us a little bit about saying, you know, everyone wants to, I think, use artificial intelligence in helping the process. It lowers our costs and maybe streamlines some of the decision making. But it's the old garbage in, garbage out. And if you by chance have some type of a human bias going into the creation of your algorithms, the same thing's going to come out on the other end. But how can technology, you mentioned at least one technology, how can technology help institutions do a better job of penetrating what if sometimes really tough markets to get into?
Geo-marketing, maybe? I think those are some of the questions that we're trying to identify ourselves. You know, there's a lot of discussion around AI and bias and making sure that we understand and we can test and measure. We've seen that come out from the CFPB recently. That's a focus. But how can we use technology to help penetrate into these neighborhoods? I'm not exactly sure. I really think, or at least from our perspective, it comes down to people and relationships and getting into those areas and meeting people where they are, getting to know them, penetrating the faith-based communities, knocking on doors and doing those home buyer seminars and really educating people about the benefits of home ownership and what it can do for generations of wealth building. It comes down to education.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point, because I think if you're really worried about a regulator coming in, or maybe in the case of an IMB, the CFPB launching an investigation, I think it's really important if you can sit down with the regulator and like you are doing perhaps with the FDIC and say, let me show you all the steps, the good faith steps that we are taking. We have bilingual loan officers. We have people who live in the communities that we're trying to serve. We have people of color trying to do this. We host these seminars for people. Yes, it's a cost. But it's going to be a lot cheaper than having to pay millions later on to the federal government to settle an allegation against you.
And like you said, like those settlements, the consent orders that are coming through, they're almost identical to each other, right? There's three yes. parts to it. And it's all dollars. And it's millions of dollars. What was the number that you had said we're up to just this year?
I think we're up to $107 million now, and that's just on like 9 cases. So,
and those are only the ones that are public that we know about, right?
I'm sure there's other investigations that are going on that maybe they're getting other settlements that aren't being publicized, or maybe there's no financial implications, but there's steps that institutions are agreeing to. So it really is. I think it's just important whether you serve a rural area, whether you serve an urban area or suburban, particularly those who are maybe saying we really live in the suburbs, that you don't constrict your territory so small that it doesn't happen to include minority areas, because you can't really pick and choose the geographic area that minutely, I don't think, to say that you don't have a responsibility to serve a broad swath of your community.
You know, it's funny, I'm starting to change my vernacular because I'm getting on board with the new term that a lot of folks are starting to use, which is the BIPOC. Have you heard this as well? So minority, it says other than, it says less than, right? It says minority, right? And so is there another word that we can use that doesn't say less than? And that's where BIPOC is coming into play, which is Black or Indigenous Peoples of Color. It's an acronym. And so even in my fair lending reviews, as I'm starting to type it up, where I used to write majority, minority, now I'm starting to say BIPOC communities. I'm changing the vernacular a little bit.
It's a good way to look at it as well. Yeah. It's not a less than, more than type of a situation. It's looking at certain communities and say, how best can we serve people of color and people of a variety of income and wealth as well, I think is really critical.
And correct some of those errors from the past.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, listen, as mortgage lenders, our goal really is to grow home ownership. And there's no getting around the fact that a majority of new emerging homeowners are going to be BIPOC people. Mm-hmm. If we don't find ways to reach out and to serve that community, well, frankly, a lot of those institutions are going to go out of business because it's the other institutions that go after those borrowers who are going to be thriving. And I think as an industry, we have to sit down and try to figure out strategies that will be really effective in meeting these needs. And it's a language issue. It's a cultural issue. It's geographic issues. But we have a great opportunity to bring the American dream of home ownership into a far wider array of people, assuming we can finally increase the housing supply, which is probably another topic that the 12 days has considered and we don't have the opportunity to solve here.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mean to be a commercial too much for iEmergent, but Laird Nasuli, you know, when you're looking at that product, that's some of the things that you talk about is the opportunity and the predictive analytics. Like there's opportunity. Like it's not just because, hey, we should do this because it's the right thing to do. It's, hey, there's loans here. We can make loans. So let's figure out a strategy. Let's look at the maps. Let's find out where, these centers are located and let's go knock on some doors. Let's get in there.
Yeah, these don't have to be loss leaders.
Right.
Do we have any questions?
I don't have any questions, but I thought maybe that we've got a great audience on board. So number one, I wanted to remind everybody, please, if you have questions for Amy and Kirk, please pop them into the chat so that we can pick them up and get them to them. But I thought one thing that I would love to hear you, Amy, I mean, you've talked about the things that you need to be doing. But I thought it would be interesting to hear from you as a lender member, kind of the environments that you're going into and how much trust and understanding the culture of those environments plays into how successful you are.
And can I throw one question at Amy as well?
Jeez.
How friendly are the bank regulators when they come in and talk about this? Are they really hard-nosed about it, or are they really trying to say, hey, how can we work together to help you solve this issue?
I'll let you know when the exam is over. Somebody did ask a question. I did see it pop up. They were writing down BIPOC and they were asked what the B stood for. It's Black or Indigenous Peoples of Color, BIPOC, to answer that question. Faith, we're really lucky at our organization. We've recently hired an excellent sales manager that has a great track record of recruiting excellent qualified loan officers that are used to being in the communities. A lot of them are bilingual. They are beat the street loan officers with realtor relationships. They are focused on first time home buyer. They're all very well versed in doing credit type education to borrowers. They really work with them for a long period of time, make sure that they're home ownership ready, and then get a lot of referral business from that. So kind of to answer your question, like how difficult is it to get, you have to find the right people. And if you're not finding the right people, then you have to home grow the right people. But I think it comes with having a strategy an intentional strategy as to how you want to serve your communities. First, identify where is your community. That's step one. And then two, how are you going to penetrate that community for the opportunity that is there? And then coming up with the activities that you then need to get in there.
And I would throw out too that I know that it often seems that a community group is adversarial to a financial institution. But I think if you actually go out to the communities, you meet with some of the leaders of the, let's say, ethnic groups or just housing advocates, low-income housing advocates, and you go out and you try to show a good faith effort to meet with them to get their ideas about how you can be a better financial institution for the entire community, you will gain a long way in building trust with them. And that will also help you if you're a regulated institution in your engagement with your regulators.
You know, you mentioned that, and my sales manager and I were also involved with MBA's new project of Convergence in Philadelphia, which is the third location for the Convergence project. It's 2023 was just getting it off the ground. We're starting to create goals. We're in break right now, pick it back up. But yes, those community leaders, what we found out is that they might not know what programs are out there or available. And they're seeking that information because they're in front of people all the time. And they need to know there's a disconnect between the lenders that want to lend and the people that they're facing. And so if we can all get on the same page, then we can really start to do some good things, right?
And a place like Philadelphia, for anyone out there who happens to be in the area, both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have identified Philadelphia as an area that they are doing special purpose credit programs for. I know that Freddie's list is a little longer, but I know that Fannie is targeting Atlanta, Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit, Memphis, and Philadelphia. Freddie is doing many of those same cities. They throw in a couple in Texas as well along the border towns, at least one in Florida. So if you do live in those areas, or even if you don't, I would recommend if you are a seller servicer to one of the GSEs is to reach out to your account managers there and say, can you help us? Can you give us ideas? Can we sponsor an event with you that would help us go out and better educate our public as to what we have to offer to them?
I think FHFA was on earlier in our 12 days of TMC, and they were talking about the two ways that they were helping with the special purpose credit programs. One was providing liquidity purchasing. So talking with them and finding out if you're a seller servicer, if you have a program, can they help with liquidity? And then two is, getting folks involved in the special purpose credit programs that they have available. But I couldn't remember, was that a pilot program, or are they calling it a pilot program? Because only you have to apply to get into it. Do you know?
I believe you probably have to apply to get into it. But I think Fannie and Freddie is saying, listen, if you sell into us, if you serve those particular areas, and again, that's the pilot, I think, is looking at the number of cities that they are right now. And Fannie is putting a special focus on the Black homeownership journey. And Freddie is focused a little bit more on Blacks, Hispanics, and is actually very interested in trying to broaden the availability of manufactured housing. So if you're able to reach out, the point is that I think they will help you through, and then you can provide, I know, closing costs are up to a certain amount of money that can go toward down payments for the borrowers. I think it's around $7,500 is about the maximum that can be offered. Not a whole lot of changes, I don't believe, on the underwriting side of things. I think both Fannie and Freddie and banks are very concerned about widening the underwriting, but they will try to provide ways to help facilitate down payment problems and other related closing costs that may make the initial step into homeownership difficult for people who are of low wealth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a challenge out there that isn't going away, at least until the Biden administration is gone. But these have a way of kind of staying in the system. And I would think that we can see in an election year, particularly coming up, another new effort by Justice to try to indicate that they're really on top of things.
Yeah, I was wondering that if we had any kind of administration change, will the priorities of these regulators change? And I don't know if it would. I think that some of these things are around to stay.
I think we will see some changes in the direction where the GSEs are going. And that could happen if a Republican administration were to come in. I think we would probably see an order to de-emphasize the special purpose credit programs and other methods of broadening and to focus again on exiting conservatorship for the GSEs and raising capital. But we'll see.
Yeah. So as we're kind of coming into, I think we have 5 minutes left. I wanted to kind of talk just a little bit about summarizing some of the things that we can do as institutions to make sure that we're kind of going in the right way, right? So we talk about policies and procedures, meeting people where they are, getting into those communities, education, but not just the education within the communities, educations of our staff as well, and making sure that the language that they're using internally is reflective of our strategies, right? So we kind of saw with some of the cases that came out recently that emails were being used.
Right.
And we had some bad language, like the Trident case, right? So making sure that our people aren't putting things in email that you wouldn't want someone else to read, right? Because that could become evidence against us. So teaching our people, looking at those DOJ settlements is a good place to start, making sure that we have outreach to real estate professionals that are within the BIPOC communities. Talked about the consumer education, advertising, and documenting that advertising, the subsidy programs.
Knowing your peers.
Yes. And most specifically, knowing your peers, right? Define your peer, take that 50 to 200% volume, chart them, and then see how you stack up and measure it. Being controlled.
And again, while we are competing against peers all the time, on topics like this, I think it's fair game if you're having, an industry meeting, an MBA meeting, a community bank meeting in your town, to ask folks, these are challenges we all face. What kind of strategies are you using? It is not necessarily a violation of any antitrust rules to discuss these type of issues. This is really an effort to try to solve some things.
Solve some problems. Yeah. And then lastly is the marketing material, making sure that you're advertising to a diverse population, that you're reflective of your lending.
For all of you joining, number one, obviously everyone knows that we love collaboration here at TMC. We will be starting.
It's in your name.
We will be starting a compliance and risk working group in January. Which is a great place to be able to have some of these conversations or ask questions of, I'm sure Amy will probably be part of that group, but ask questions of your peers within TMC related to some of these topics of other people in similar roles within your organization. So we look forward to many of you, if you have those types of questions, participating in that group with us. We also do have a community first working group that's well established that has been within TMC for a number of years at this point, which would also is also a great forum to get some assistance. And we're here to help with any of those things or provide direction to other people that can help you as well. I want to thank you both. It always is a pleasure to be able to talk with both of you. You are both a wealth of information And it makes it easy for us here at TMC to have people like you at our fingertips to talk about some of these maybe a little bit harder conversations that come to the forefront every once in a while. Mm-hmm. So thank you to Kirk and Amy for hosting today. We do appreciate you. We are wrapping up today with our sprint, our last sprint session, where we are developing the final presentations, which will be done tomorrow. So immediately tomorrow, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our sprint presentation competition, where our three teams will present their solutions, will happen. Immediately following that at 3 p.m. Eastern is the Rundown, which is sponsored by MGMIC and will feature our industry sprint awards and the announcement for those of you that have been participating in the entire 12 days of TMC of other awards to our 12 days participants. So thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate all of you and look forward to seeing you all soon.
Thank you. Happy holidays. Great to see you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.